Limits of Narrative Analysis. Measuring the effectiveness of narratives. Those who design and implement narratives face significant obstacles when it comes to assessing the effectiveness of their efforts. Methodologically speaking, it is difficult to isolate a group's narratives as the causal factor of the group's success in achieving its strategic goals. This difficulty arises from the potential presence of confounding variables that might better account for the effects thought to result from a group's strategic communication. Moreover, although narratives are an important component of a group's mobilization and other strategies, narratives have limitations. A carefully crafted narrative in and of itself cannot mobilize a population in the absence of other crucial variables, such as resource mobilization and political opportunities. In this section, we discuss these limitations and review basic strategies Special Operations Forces practitioners can use to help determine the effectiveness of narratives. As mentioned in the Structure and Components of Persuasive Narrative section of this study, neuroscience remains at the level of identifying correlations through carefully designed experiments, focusing on observable, measurable behavior. In many cases, researchers have not yet progressed to reliably identifying causal relationships between narrative elements and changes in behavior. Part of the challenge of determining causal relationships is measuring the effectiveness of narratives. There are numerous impediments to gaining such data in samples of sufficient size to establish such reliable relationships. The research community continues to work on solutions to this challenge. Obtaining raw data. It is important to note that the research referenced in this study was performed in controlled settings in sophisticated laboratories. In these environments, it is relatively easy to gather data. Instrumentation, research staff, and study participants are in the same facility. In addition, everyone has a shared understanding of the purpose of gathering the data. The data that are most useful to researchers and practitioners, however, exist outside of laboratories and controlled settings in the real world. Many of the target audiences of operationally relevant narratives reside halfway across the world in communities that are not necessarily friendly to being surveyed. Accordingly, it is difficult in some instances to obtain raw data on the impact of narratives. Even if researchers or operators devise ways to obtain data, there remain significant obstacles to measuring the effectiveness of narratives. Direct and indirect measurement opportunities may be available and appropriate for a given operational circumstance, including a narrative. Planning the measurement strategy at the time the narrative is created is critical to advancing data collection to assess the narrative's efficacy. What data are needed? Before methods are devised to obtain data, practitioners need to determine which data need to be obtained. Measures of effectiveness for narratives are lacking, and at least two significant obstacles need to be overcome to develop such measures. Any measure of effectiveness will need to distinguish between the impact of a narrative and the impact of the myriad other influences and circumstances surrounding individuals' behavioral choices. Narratives are only one influence on an individual outside of a controlled lab setting, and researchers and practitioners measuring effectiveness will need to delineate between actions taken because of narratives and actions taken because of other influences, such as need or desire for monetary gain. This assumes that such delineation is possible, when in fact, it is likely that individuals' actions are driven by a combination of these and other influences. However, measuring the effectiveness of a narrative on behavior requires knowing it was the narrative that led to the behavior. Otherwise, it is only conjecture to assert that behavioral change occurred because of a strategic narrative. Additionally, it is crucial to define what constitutes success for a narrative. Each narrative has its own aim, but in the context of countering violent non-state actors, there are multiple possible definitions of success. Narrative success could mean the target audience ceases actions against U.S. interests, perhaps transforming violent non-state actors into inactive discontents constitutes success. Or a narrative could be considered effective only when it causes a violent non-state actor to turn 180 degrees and not only stop violent acts against U.S. interests, but also start acting in favor of U.S. interests. Or finally, maybe success is achieved when anti-U.S. violent non-state actors redirect their violent actions against other groups and their interests. The same issue will unfold for the aim of any narrative, and the solution may be to redefine success with each narrative campaign or instance of messaging. In any case, measuring the effectiveness of narratives to change behavior requires being able to define what constitutes success, failure, and neutral results in between. Current approaches. Narrative practitioners at the Department of State's Center for Strategic Counterterrorism Communications revealed that there are methods for gathering limited data. For instance, social networking platforms have enabled operators to track exposure to narratives. An operator can look at the number of likes a piece of narrative receives on Facebook or how many times it has been shared on the social networking site. Additionally, an operator can track how many times a tweet on Twitter is retweeted. However, these data provide only an indication of exposure because Facebook likes, Facebook shares, and Twitter retweets indicate only frequency and do not provide substantive content illustrating the audience's reaction. However, these functions were designed to indicate positive attitude toward the content, so it can be inferred that the higher their frequency, the greater approval the message is receiving. To gauge the impact of a narrative, a Special Operations Forces practitioner can also examine the adversary's response. For instance, the mere response of an adversary is an initial indication that the narrative had an impact, whether positive or negative. The narrative caused enough concern that the adversary expended resources to respond. Furthermore, practitioners can look at the content of the response and determine which elements of the narrative bothered or worried the adversary the most. This can provide clues to highlight which elements should be continued or enhanced because they resonate with the target audience. However, a clever adversary might also focus its response on the elements it is least concerned with to trick the narrative's author into investing resources in those elements at the expense of the truly effective elements. Finally, the degree of response can tell the practitioner how bothersome and therefore effective a narrative is in the eyes of the adversary. Conventional logic dictates that the more resources an adversary expends to respond to a narrative, the more damaging the adversary believes the narrative is to its campaign. Yet this also presents an opportunity to deceive the operator by suggesting a narrative is effective when in fact it is not. The goal of such deception would be to encourage the narrative's author to produce similar messaging because it is ineffective and, in fact, not worrisome, thereby taking resources away from other narrative efforts that might be more effective. At some point, however, the cost of producing such a deception outweighs the value, so these deception operations would likely be limited. The lesson remains that an adversary's response to a narrative can inform an operator about the adversary's concerns, which elements of the narrative resonate with the target audience, and how effective the narrative might have been. A possible measure that would provide more fidelity in assessing whether a narrative is effective is a call to action. A call to action refers to an instruction in the narrative to take a particular course of conduct. The Get Out the Vote campaign of the 1990s is one example. This campaign engaged various media to instruct people to vote in elections. The designers of this campaign were able to measure the effectiveness of their messaging by tracking increases in voter turnout. Similarly, there are various public health campaigns focused on vaccinating at-risk populations against disease. The creators can determine the effectiveness of their messaging by counting how many people heed their advice and report to the clinic for vaccination. Calls to action, however, do not provide a perfect measure of effectiveness because some of those who engage in the desired conduct may do so because they have been told to do so by others who saw the message. This can artificially inflate the number of people influenced by the message. Additionally, calls to action may not be well suited for the context of resistance movements. One difficulty is determining the action that the narrative's author would call on the target population to take. Another challenge is that the audience might agree with the narrative, but still might not take the requested action because the adversary poses too great a danger. Although calls to action can tell operators a lot about what is effective in a narrative and with whom, they may be difficult to execute in the context of insurgencies or other manifestations of resistance movements. Public health campaigns and effective messaging. What is effective messaging? In the operational context, effective messaging, including narratives, is designed to achieve a specific outcome, for instance, a persuasive narrative, and that outcome should be measurable. Measuring strategic and tactical outcomes may not be easy or obvious in the operational setting. Both direct and indirect effects may offer sufficient options to predict the likelihood that a narrative will achieve its purpose or confirm the efficacy of a narrative that has been deployed. Factors influencing behaviors are multiple and complex. We know from social science and neuroscience disciplines that individual differences and environmental influences interact to yield a change in behavior, if there is one, in response to persuasive messaging. How then do we determine whether a message achieves the purpose for which it was created or designed? There is little predictive validity in recipients' self-reported accounts of how they perceive messages, how they have processed messages, or how they intend to act in response to messages. People cannot always describe why or how they have particular thoughts, perceptions, or feelings. Furthermore, there is a substantial disconnect between self-reported intention to act and actual behavioral outcome, for instance, having taken action. Given the limitations of self-reporting, how do we proceed to understand, construct, and measure persuasive messages? Objective measurement approaches, such as those found in neuroscience, can complement what can be learned from social science approaches. Specifically, to overcome concerns related to self-reporting methodologies, we can gain additional insight from considering the neural response to persuasive messaging in real time. Understanding the underlying mechanisms may be one way to predict behavioral change in response to operationally relevant persuasive messaging. In this manner, a neuroscientific approach can help us understand the complex cognitive processes involved in attention, memory, decision-making, and discrimination. For example, certain brain regions are activated when people rate a message as persuasive, in contrast to when they rate a message as not persuasive. These regions are similar to those that are activated when people engage in mentalizing, undertaking the mental processes of making sense of each other and ourselves, and perspective-taking, understanding other people's thoughts, feelings, and motivations. Messages that have been specifically tailored to an individual or group with similar characterization or motivation, for example, voters of a specific political party, age bracket and socioeconomic status, or history of making political campaign contributions, have been shown to have a greater impact on behavior than messages created for a general audience. This is not particularly surprising. In further study, brain areas associated with self-referential processing were activated in response to tailored messages as compared to the decreased activation observed in response to general messages. Self-referential processing means that in response to individual targeted messaging, the participants personally evaluated their intentions and goals with respect to the messaging. The message source also contributes to the persuasive process. Generally, expert sources delivering the message are more persuasive than non-expert sources. Researchers have shown that brain areas associated with semantic elaboration, memory formation, and trust are activated when engaging with a message delivered by a perceived expert source. These findings indicate that attention to the source of the message, in terms of the messenger's expertise, may have implications on attitudes about and memory of the persuasive message. Recently, marketing, economics, and communication disciplines have also used a neuroscientific approach to delve more deeply into the product-consumer relationship, economic exchanges, and the efficacy of public health messaging. Public service announcements, PSAs, are a key component in the public health toolkit for delivering persuasive health messages via mass media. The ultimate purpose of these messages is to change the public's health behaviors. Research in health communications clearly demonstrates the attributes of a persuasive message, a neuroscientific measurement, and a measurable outcome. It is a context in which validity to predict both short- and long-term behavioral change may be determined as a result of the narrative's clinical relevance and the audience's engagement with the healthcare system. For example, increased activation in the prefrontal cortex, a key decision-making area of the brain, predicted increased use of sunscreen in study participants 1 week after they were exposed to persuasive messaging concerning sun exposure. Importantly, the neural activation pattern predicted an additional 23% of the variability in behavior above participants' self-reported intention and attitudes about sunscreen. A number of researchers have also examined the value of anti-smoking campaigns to determine whether there are real reductions in tobacco use in response to anti-smoking persuasive messages. Researchers imaged the brains of smokers while the smokers watched anti-smoking PSAs. The researchers also asked the participants about their intentions to reduce their tobacco use after having watched the messages. Activation in the prefrontal cortex explained 20% of the variance in exhaled carbon monoxide levels, a biological indicator of recent tobacco smoking, 1 month after the initial testing and self-reported intention to quit. These findings suggest that the brain activation pattern may be a marker to predict future reduction in tobacco use. These findings illustrate that an objective measure of behavior is a better predictor of behavioral change than the audience's self-reported intention. Along this line of inquiry, Anli Wang et al., in an article titled Content Matters, Neuroimaging Investigation of Brain and Behavioral Impact of Televised Anti-Tobacco Public Service Announcements, examined anti-smoking PSAs to confirm the relationship between brain activation patterns and behavioral outcomes in order to try to determine the features of the PSA that were most effective in changing smokers' behavior. Brains of smokers who were not seeking treatment were imaged using functional magnetic resonance imaging, while the smokers viewed a number of PSAs that were considered to have both strong and weak arguments. For example, risks of cancer and other disease were considered strong arguments, whereas yellowed teeth and bad breath were considered weak arguments. And differing levels of sensationalism, for example, disturbing pictures of smokers in ill health versus pictures of actors smoking in popular movies. The researchers' findings indicated that a number of brain regions were activated by a combination of the strength and the sensationalism of the PSA content. One specific brain area predicted the smoker's urine cotinine levels, the gold standard biological marker of nicotine use in the preceding 3 to 5 days, 1 month after the smokers watched the PSAs. That is, the higher the activation in this brain area, the lower the cotinine level at the 1 month follow-up, indicating a reduction in nicotine use. Interestingly, this brain area, the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, is associated with self-referential and internally focused attention. As illustrated in the other examples, the predictive strength of the relationship between the brain and the smoker's behavior was greater than that of the relationship between the smoker's self-reported intention to quit and their behavior. Including the neuroscientific findings from public health communication studies of persuasive messages is relevant to this discussion. These findings illustrate the relevance of a neuroscientific approach to understanding underlying mechanisms of persuasive messages and the importance of objective outcome measures to determine the predictive validity of persuasive messages. Through these examples, we have illustrated that persuasive messages can affect real, measurable behavior change. Certainly, a neuroscientific approach and certain measurement strategies are not practical for the operational setting. Their utility is in determining and validating the features of effective, persuasive messages and encouraging the community to plan for and measure the efficacy of messages. The gray box. Finally, it is important to recall that humans are not always able to explain the reasons for their actions. People will rationalize their actions and express what they believe was their motivation for taking an action, but neuroscience has progressed enough to demonstrate that humans do not report their motivations accurately. As an example, economics has relied on the premise that humans are rational actors in their decision-making. Neuroscientists have discovered that the emotional centers of the brain play a much larger role in decision-making than rational actor theory would suggest. In light of this, any measurement of a narrative's effectiveness cannot rely on the audience reporting its reasons for acting. The human brain remains a gray box about which we understand a great deal, but about which there is still much to learn. Accordingly, neuroscientific insights into narratives must be received with recognition that they do not come from reading a person's mind. These insights reveal useful connections and elucidate the processes at play, but they do not yet provide definitive answers on how individuals interact with narratives.